Women are a favorite target of the enemy in spiritual warfare. You see, there's two things that, in a manner of speaking, work against women in the warfare. The one is that women have a covering. And we all have a covering in one respect, of course, like the pastor, teacher, and that. And that's not what I mean. Women have a covering within their relationship in the family, and it is a spiritual covering. A married woman is covered by her husband. An unmarried woman is covered by her pastor. And so women have this covering. And men, although a man is also covered by his pastor, but in a different sort of a way than a woman. And the man also within the home is the covering. And he has to have his covering to be Christ in the home. And so here's the double strategy against women. On the one hand, women feel covered. And so there can be a mindset that the woman is not the one who's going to get the attack. That the head, the covering, will get the attack. And frequently that's how it works. Like in a church, all members of a church get attacked, but the brunt will usually start with the pastor. And certainly other people can get quite strongly attacked also. And the more that people become one with the church and involved in the heart of the church, then the more they'll be attacked as well. So there can be this thought, well, you know, I have a covering, the head, I'm kind of sheltered by the head, by the covering. And in some respects, that's correct. She is sheltered by the covering under one condition, that she has a submission through the cross to that covering. However, there is an element of that that does not protect her from the attack. There's an element of that also that makes her a more of a target because of it. Because it's easier for a woman to not realize that she is the target. She is a target. So let's say that you get someone like a pastor's wife. And I'm not talking about my wife here. She's wonderful. But let's say you get like a pastor's wife. And if that pastor's wife is not going to keep herself built up, if she doesn't keep herself, and she can't necessarily look to her husband to do that. No woman, pastor's wife or not, she can be the wife of anybody. Or not even be a wife. No woman can look to her husband to sustain her portion. Ladies, when you are married, your husband cannot do that for you. He's not made that way. It's not given to him to be able to do that. When you are married, you are still a believer priest unto God. And though you may be covered by your husband, though in the order of things your husband is your head, it does not eliminate your believer priesthood. It does not eliminate your individual relationship to Christ. And as such, it does not eliminate that you individually must stay built up in the Word of God. If a woman looks to her husband to be her provision, she will not have a provision. Because her husband is not designed to replace Christ in her life. her husband is not designed to replace the Word of God in her life. Her husband is not designed to replace prayer in her life. He's not capable of it. He wasn't made that way. However, if a woman looks to her husband to be her provision, she will become a major target because she's weak. What happens if the husband goes south? What does she have then? There's no guarantee he won't. This is one of the reasons why it's so imperative that people wait on God for marriage. Because you don't know what will be with the spouse. Maybe they'll be wonderful their whole life, but you don't know that. So you wait on God so that you know that you are in the perfect will of God if something happens. And that God had allowed it for your promotion. Makes a big difference. Makes all the difference between being married and being divorced in some cases. But anyway, a woman cannot look to her husband to sustain her. He's not made that way. He is not Christ. He is a man who God gave to that woman and the woman to him, and he is to love her and she is to submit to him. However, she is to submit to him only as is fitting, not as is not fitting. If he asks her for something that's not fitting, she does not submit. Why? She's a believer priest. She's a believer priest. The husband has to realize she is a believer priest. Somehow I have a feeling that we're not going to get to the message tonight. But that's okay. This is good stuff. Ladies, learn to build yourselves up. Your husband does not replace your relationship with Christ. If you as a woman feel that your husband can replace your relationship with Christ, you've turned him into an idol and your relationship becomes demonic. That's bad news. Nor can a guy do that to a girl. There are guys who will try to do that to the woman. And that's also demonic. Can't do that. Let's talk a little bit, just for a couple minutes, practical terms, relationships, a little bit about marriage for young people, marriage 101, some practical stuff. Don't even think about a relationship with a person until you have an intimate one with God. Marla said something really good one time. Your relationship with your spouse will only be as good as your relationship with God. That's important to remember. Your relationship with your spouse will be only as good as your relationship with God. Why? Because you don't have anything to bring into it. So only what you get from God is what you have to bring into the relationship. Now, you can try to build a relationship on personality rapport. And some people actually manage a lifetime with that. Most people don't. But some people do. But that is a happy relationship that has no meaning or purpose. It just is. And so it's very happy in a superficial realm. And so long as the person is content in a superficial realm, they're fine. And some people never get beyond the superficial, and they're fine. But they're also empty. So how do you like, as a woman, what do you look for in a man? You look for certain characteristics. First thing you look for in a man is he utterly and completely submitted to God? Does he walk in faith or does he walk by sight? Is there fruit of in his life? What is the fruit of the Spirit in his life? Is there fruit of the Spirit in his life? Is he mature with the Savior? He may be young, but is he mature? I don't, generally speaking, and there certainly are sovereign exceptions, plenty of them. But to marry a young man is frequently unwise. Why? Because the young man hasn't learned yet. Ladies, never marry a man who is insecure. Insecurity is one of the things that plagues men more than anything else. Never marry a man who is insecure. Why? Because he's going to try to make you his portion to build his self-image. And if he tries to use you to build his own self-image, he'll end up abusing you. So never marry a man who's insecure. Never marry a man who doesn't have a cross in his life. A man with a cross will be a godly man, with a practical, living cross in his life. That will be a godly man. That will be a man who loves you and is faithful to you. A man who does not have a cross in his life will react at you. And he may, on an emotional level, via affection, say that he loves you and be sincere. But what he will have is a filial love. An affection based on characteristics. He won't have an agape love. A love that is based on his relationship to God and what he has gotten from him toward you. So let's say that you're such a woman who's getting into this relationship and the guy has no cross in his life. No functional living cross. At first, when he was courting, he was often pleasant. But invariably, you see around the edges, and sometimes a little more clearly than others, that something's not right. Around the edges, you'll see, oh, he has a temper. But he wouldn't do that to me. And he'll even say things like that. Yeah, I have a temper, but I wouldn't do that to you. No, if he has a temper, he has a temper. It's not discriminatory. Tempers are not discriminatory. If he has a temper, he has no cross. If he has no cross, he has no sustaining self-control. And so, whatever it is that that lack of cross brings out of him, it will come at you. Because the day will come where something about you, whether he's right or wrong in it, it really doesn't matter as far as his response. The day will come where something about you touches on whatever area he has a problem with because he doesn't have the cross. And if it's a temper, then it will be the temper that comes at you. And he will become an unkind man, perhaps very critical or reactionary. Perhaps he will be a man who is subtle in his criticism, or maybe he'll be a man who is outright in his criticism. Sometimes, because he has no cross, he has a temper, he has an underlying anger issue, and he knows that he should behave a certain way because of religious training, and so he will make his criticism to undermine you. Where he's not openly criticizing, but subtly suggesting. And it's there to undermine your self-image, your confidence, how you feel about yourself. Essentially, it's there to hurt you. This happens in marriages. Ladies, never marry a man who has no cross. And yes, that may mean that you end up waiting a while. But I'll tell you something. You're much better off. You may not, and I don't think women here, you ladies are wonderful in this regard. Don't get me wrong. But I realize I'm also talking to many people on the internet. You may not like the idea of waiting, but I'll guarantee you this one thing. If you do not, you will profoundly wish you had. You are much better off as a single woman who is happy along with her friends in her church, her, you know, what family she has, her parents or siblings. If she doesn't live with her family or near her family, then the people in her in the church she attends, the friends and family she has through that, friends perhaps in school, you're much better off single with those companions than married to a man who is unkind. Those companions, the lack of having a husband will not destroy you. Having the wrong husband will. Don't lament this point. Nobody says that you'll need to wait long. Maybe you won't, maybe you will. I don't know. But don't lament this fact. If you lament this fact, then you lament your own life. We in this society tend to put this romanticized image, this illusion of marriage. And yes, it is of God, but we look at it through an illusion. Often single people seem to have this illusion that the marriage somehow will fulfill them. It's an illusion. The trouble with illusions is they're not real. It's only an illusion. You will be fulfilled in your marriage through the very same thing that you are fulfilled as single people. And you may tell yourself as single people who are pure and godly, but nevertheless human, I'm looking to forward to having sex with my spouse. And I would very much like to have this in my life. Now maybe you do, maybe you don't, but there are plenty of young people who are godly and pure who are looking forward to this. And it is not an unnatural thought. But realize something. That sex with your spouse will only be as rewarding and satisfying and intimate as your relationship is to God. Because if in your sex life Christ is not between me and you, then your sex life is simply a lust life and not a love life. And if you bring that into your marriage, you will have a very unsatisfying and unfulfilling sex life. So don't be too eager despite your biology. Learn how to bring your natural desires to the cross and let God fulfill you in other ways until He allows you to be fulfilled in that way by the right person. But even then, that person cannot be a provision, they can only be an expression. So find your provision in your relationship with God. And then you'll have an expression in your sex life with your spouse. Never marry a man who's unkind. Because if he is unkind to you now, he's going to be much more unkind to you later, and he lacks the fruit of the Spirit in his life. If he lacks the fruit of the Spirit in his life, that means he's not spiritual. He is carnal. And the kindness that he exhibits is only the peak of the iceberg. Be very cautious about that. Remember, marriage is there to be an expression of God's relationship to us, not to be a substitute for it. Ladies, never look at a man to see if he is the man of your dreams. Why? You don't know what your dreams actually are. If you think you will find the man of your dreams, maybe you're right, but probably you're wrong. Prince Charming is often a frog. And the frog is sometimes Prince Charming. I know a woman, she's middle-aged now. She had spent her entire life looking for Prince Charming. She never found him. Not because he didn't come, but because she didn't recognize him. This woman had known many men who were good men. She's not saved, so we're talking simply in worldly terms, but even by a worldly standard, there is such a thing as a good man. Perhaps loyal and faithful, hardworking, caring, not selfish. She had known and had the interest of a number of good men, but she wasn't interested in them because they did not meet her illusion, really, they did not meet her delusion of Prince Charming. And so she did ultimately marry a man. She divorced him in a few years. She absolutely hates him now. He was not a good man. And she, to this day, she is confused because she doesn't know what to look for. She's looking for him in the superficial, where a relationship like marriage can only be satisfied in that which is profound. Ladies, you may not marry a handsome man or an athletic man, and it doesn't really matter because his good looks will wear off very quickly. Don't look for Prince Charming. I find it interesting in the Bible, in Genesis, there was a portion where Isaac and Rebekah were together, and Isaac made his father's mistake. He had told her he was in a place that was he thought would be hostile toward him, and Rebekah was beautiful. And so he said to her, and I still don't get it, tell him you're my sister so he doesn't kill me. But that also means that the king might sleep with you. Like, I don't quite get that mindset, but you know what? Whatever it was, what it was. The point being that the king had looked out of his window and he saw Isaac caress Rebekah. And he realized she was his wife. Now, why do I bring that up? Isaac was not Rebekah's dream man. Isaac was about 30 years older, approximately, than Rebekah. Rebekah was about 16 and Isaac was in his 40s. He wasn't her dream man. But I'll tell you something. He loved her. And despite the fact that he had fear in his life and made some mistakes because of it, his expression of love toward her was very tender. But he was not her dream man. On the other hand, he was the man that was brought to her by the Holy Spirit, and she recognized it. Because she was asked, she wasn't forced, she was asked, and she agreed. That was not her dream man. Ruth and Boaz. Boaz was in no way Ruth's dream man. Ruth was probably in her 20s. Boaz was in his 80s. There was no way, naturally speaking, he was her dream man. But he was the man selected for her from God. Who were perhaps dream men in the Bible? Samson might have been a dream man. Right, how would you like to be married to Samson? Yeah, no thanks. Who else? Maybe Saul was a dream man. Saul was tall, strong, handsome. He was the most handsome man in all of Israel. He was every woman's dream man. But how disloyal was he to God? He would not have been a good man to be married to. Boaz was 80 years old, you know, in his 80s, but he was loyal to God. And he was a godly man. And though he wasn't certain of this, he was not Ruth's idea of the ideal husband in natural terms. But I'll guarantee you this, and I know this because of the way she was treated prior. She was a well-loved wife. She was a well-loved wife. Why? God's man. Don't look for dream men. Dream men only exist in dreams. Like, realize something. The man that you're going to be married to, he's every bit as human as you are. So don't look for dream men. I see a lot of young women every single day because of my job. And I see the thinking that they have. And they don't know how to think. And unfortunately, because of their design, a young woman who does not know how to think in relationships is a young woman who suffers much more profoundly because of her relationships. On the other hand, young men. What does a young man look for in a woman? Well, in some ways, exactly the same things that a young woman looks for in a young man. Why? Because you're looking for Christ in that person. And it's the same Christ. Whether it's the man or the woman, it's the same Christ that indwells them. A young man may not marry his dream woman. Can you imagine Ahab? He thought he married his dream woman because Jezebel was amazingly beautiful. I mean, from the description in the Bible, it is entirely possible, I don't know this for a fact, that it is entirely possible she may in fact have been the most beautiful woman that has ever lived. She was also profoundly evil. She was arguably, and I think it's a strong argument, the most evil woman that has ever lived. A young man must look towards a woman with the eyes of God. And he must never marry her or be interested in her for any other reason than God is bringing him to her and her to him. Because otherwise his decision toward the young woman, and this is hard for young men, I think this element is perhaps harder for young men than it is for young women, based on the way that godly young men and women handle this. Young men have a stronger drive than young women because of their design. And so this aspect can be very difficult for a young man to stay godly in. Not that he would be ungodly, but to think godly. He cannot be interested in her because she is good looking or because she has an attractive figure or even because she has a pleasant personality. Those things are fine, but they cannot be the source of his consideration of her. A young man must be very careful that his desire toward a young woman is from God and not from his libido. Because it is entirely possible for emotions to mix with libido, for him to convince himself that it's right and remain blind to what actually is right. The fact that a girl is pretty doesn't mean that God has given her to you. And if the only reason that a young man desires to be married to a young woman is because she is pretty, then he's going to find very quickly that his standard was far too low. Beauty does not exist on the surface. There is a young woman I know. She's a teenager. She is very pretty, if at first you glimpse her. She is one of the most unattractive people I have ever met. Now, she has guys asking her out all the time. But she is hideous. Why? She is selfish and self-centered. Has a very unkind and ungodly attitude. She is the center of the universe, and you better treat her that way, or she will punish you. But yet, she has guys going after her. You know why? They're foolish. Beauty in an ungodly woman is a mockery. A young man should never consider marrying a young woman who does not manifest the fruit of the Spirit. Because she will not respond to him. He should never consider marrying a woman who is selfish. And he should never consider marrying a woman who is unkind. because she will not keep Christ between them. She will keep her temperament between them. And if the temperament is an unkind temperament, he will lay down his life for her if he is a godly young man. But it will be a one-sided relationship. There are three basic types of relationships. There is a ministry, there is a fellowship, and there is soul power. Soul power is meaningless and will ultimately fail. A ministry can have the manifestation of agape love, but it's a one-directional manifestation, where the young man will become fulfilled by God, but not by the lady. A woman was designed to be his helpmate. By the way, she was not designed to be his slave. She was designed to be his helpmate in the calling that God has given him. If she is not going to manifest the fruit of the Spirit, then the marriage may work because he is willing to lay down his life, but it will complicate his call and not complement it. He should never consider marrying a woman who is not one with his call. If she is not one with his call, then there will be division in the marriage and one person will leave their calling. Ladies, also you. You never consider marrying a man who does not share your calling. If you do, one of you will be leaving theirs. If you stay together. A young man and a young woman both should consider, what is the person that I'm thinking about, that I'm praying regarding, what are they like at home, in the privacy of their home with their family? If they are unkind in that setting, they will be unkind in the setting with you also. If when their guard is let down and they're off their best behavior outwardly because they're trying to impress, but they are willing to be hostile or unkind or reactionary or cruel, anything contrary to the fruit of the Spirit, if they're willing to be carnal and fleshly in their home with their families now, they will be even more so with you. Be careful about that. Young men, never consider marrying a young woman who is angry. If she is angry, then more often than not, her anger will be pointed. And frequently there'll be an element of malice in her life. How does this young woman treat her parents? Because the parents are the authority in the home, so long as she's living under their roof. If she treats them kindly and respectfully, she'll do the same with you. Because you will be the authority in your home as the head. If she treats them with contempt or disrespect or ungodliness, she will do the same to you because that's the attitude that in fact, whether she realizes it or not, she is manifesting toward God. Young men have to be very careful about that. Look for a woman that God has brought. But how will you decide if God has brought her or not? And how will you know when the time is right? Well, you may not always recognize that she is the one right away. Sometimes you will. But you can recognize that she is not the one. And the same is true for young women. You may not always recognize right away that he is the one, unless God speaks to your heart quickly rather than slowly, and sometimes he'll speak slowly. But you can recognize that he's not the one. If God hasn't brought you someone, don't look for them. Because if you start looking for them, when God does bring you someone, you won't recognize them. Because by looking for them, you have pre-established standards of personal preference rather than God's selections. And if you do that, then it's very possible that you'll make mistakes that you will be tied to for the rest of your life. These things about relationships, young people and untaught people, they're getting into one of the most serious callings of their life. And they do it so casually. If you can't say, I know God has brought me this person, then at best it isn't time yet. And it is possible, that he hasn't brought them at all. Don't, this is for both genders, don't marry immaturity. Immaturity in a marriage is brutal. Don't marry immaturity. It can be very cruel. At best, it's very self-centered. Never marry immaturity. Now, there are, of course, sovereign exceptions to every rule. But as a guide, this is good advice. Don't look to someone, is this a person I might marry? If you do, you're living in subjectivity. And you have put a desire ahead of God's provisions. Let God tell you when it's time to marry someone. Because I'll guarantee you that He's very faithful to do that. I find it interesting. When my wife became a believer, shortly thereafter she swore off dating. And her friends ridiculed her. And they said, how are you ever going to find a husband if you don't date? And she would answer them, you think that's too hard for God? The interesting irony is of her friends, my wife was married first. Why? because God knows what He's doing. We don't. And the sooner that I submit my will and my desires to God, the sooner He can work on my behalf. Now, you may get married soon, or maybe you'll have to wait a long time. But I'll guarantee you this. Within relationships, there is no replacing God's will. And you may take natural preferences and act on them to step out of God's will. But I will promise you this. If you do, those natural preferences will change very quickly. And what you once preferred will become your bondage. And the misery that's caused by those kind of things is unparalleled. Do it God's way. Look for godliness. And don't settle for less. And yes, people can grow. But until they do, it's not time. Let's say that God speaks to your heart that you will marry a certain person. But the person doesn't have the fruit of the Spirit. The person is immature, perhaps, or selfish, or unkind. And even if you were right, the timing is wrong. And if the timing is wrong, then it's all wrong. Because, why? Because practically speaking, maybe you married the right name, but not the right person. Because the person that would have been developed if you waited is going to be different than the one you wouldn't wait for. Do you understand what I'm saying? God needs to work on you, and to the same and perhaps greater measure, He needs to work on them. And if you don't give it that time, the name may be right, but the person will be wrong. This is good advice.